Hello, everyone. It's Dr. Joanne Dahlketter with Performing Edge Coaching International, and it is July the 28th. Amazing. Summer is just cranking along here, only a few days before the Olympics start, so that's exciting. We'll talk about that. It's just 2016, and so, did someone else just join us, too?
Yeah, this is Will.
Oh, hi, Will. How are you?
I'm good.
Okay, good. So, today we wanted to talk about, we talked about the Olympics a little bit before, but because they're, you know, just, they start August the 5th, a week from Friday, it's right here, and I have some updates for you. I wanted to, talk about the Olympics. Of course, the main reason for these calls, too, is to answer your questions, and I know you guys, Michelle and June emailed me questions, so I want to answer those first here, and then go into our, and then others of you that have questions, that's great. We can answer some at the beginning and then some at the end. So I want to talk about, you know, three keys that you can learn about performance coaching, you know, what we can learn from the Olympics for your work with athletes, even if you're not working, kind of how to work with Olympians, and then even if you are, if you're not working with an Olympian, you can learn from you know, the Olympics, I think, how to work with your athletes, because everyone is deals with these same kinds of issues, same kind of mental training issues. And then, you know, some insider stories about sports psychology, and I have some updates to the athletes I'm working with right now, heading for Brazil, and also, you know, just give you a couple of stories about different ways I've worked with athletes throughout the last five, now it's been, I guess, seven Olympic Games, with various athletes in each one and different ways to work with them. And then the Olympic trials, of course, that, for most sports, that's finished now, but, you know, what to do with working. Most of athletes, that's their main goal, is just to make, to get, you know, go through the Olympic trials and try to make the team. That's the hardest part, even harder than the Olympics themselves. And then mistakes to avoid, you know, right before the Olympics and the Olympic trials, and some ethical considerations, do's and don'ts, working with the Olympians, and then with the media, you could be an expert for the Olympics. Even now, you know, doing blogging, that sort of thing, you could be an expert on this topic, and then things, you know, do's and don'ts with the media. So, yeah, I wanted to talk about those things, and then any updates? I don't know, Michelle, did you mention, were you working with a possibility for the Olympics? I didn't know if anyone had any possibility of Olympic athletes.
Oh, hi, Dr. Joanne. Yeah, I was with a sailor. He didn't qualify, though.
He didn't qualify. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's great that you were working with him, though. You can say, always say on your resume you were working with an Olympic hopeful. There's lots of Olympic, wonderful Olympic hopefuls out there.
Yeah, so. And, you know, I pretty much solely did work around power words with him, and it really upped his game considerably. I mean, he had been in such a rut, and then he was getting outstanding results just from changing the way he was talking to himself and when he was approaching the marks, how he would, you know, he'd have a game plan, and we had rehearsed it together, what he was going to say to himself as he was approaching those marks, and he literally went from 20s in the world to top six, you know, in a regatta just last summer. So it was quite exciting to see how effective it was.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is awesome. It's great. Yeah, it's just, you know, making an Olympic team is only one of many ways to be successful. And like you say, going from like 20th to second is great. So that's a really good achievement that you can, you know, put on your resume kind of thing. And you could ask him if he'd like for his permission to, you know, for a testimonial or something. I don't know, have you ask him for a quotation or something?
No, but I don't know why I resisted it. It's a kind of a hard thing to ask, but I will do it.
Yeah, I mean, just, you know, you have to gauge your, that's where our sort of, sensitivity as clinicians comes in, I think, and you have to gauge how open they are to that sort of thing. And sometimes it's easier to just say, would it be possible to just have a quotation from you? It's better to use sometimes the word quotation than testimonial. Sounds like this, someone standing on a mountaintop shouting words. But quotation is softer and means it could be in a form of of course text is easiest, just if they email you some words. The easiest way is to say email or either talk to them on the phone or email, just say would it be possible to just have a quotation saying that our work together was helpful and that you went from, 20th to 6th place and going for the Olympics, something like that. And you could to make it easier for them, you can type it out, quotation, a possibility, or say here's two or three possibilities. Feel free to choose one or edit one or write one yourself so that they have a choice of that, because a lot of people aren't writers themselves and they don't know what to say. Or they think that you're expecting a big long letter when all you need is one line kind of thing. So making it easy for them is easier to do that way. But it's better to get it in writing. It's really important to not just by verbal, or you can say to them verbally, by phone or face. Would it be okay to use just have a quotation from you that so that other people could be inspired by our work together and other people could gain from this type of work. And then if they say yes, then say, I can just email you something and then you could just either edit it or approve or write your own. So that's a suggestion. And, it's up to you, Michelle, and each of you, what your own gut level feeling is about it, kind of thing. So,
do you use their name, Dr. Joanne, or just initials?
You could ask them what they prefer. It's better to use their name if they agree to that. But you definitely need to get permission, because some athletes are a little bit. Most athletes I've worked with have always been okay with. If I ask them, they're happy to give a quotation or testimonial. And sometimes it's text is good and audio is better and video is even better. I think many of you maybe saw when you first started this program, Stacy. I actually flew to Arizona after I worked with Stacy Dragila at the Olympic pole vaulter. She won the first ever Olympic gold medal in the Olympics for women. That was back at the Sydney Olympics, and then I worked with her at the Olympics in Athens, Greece, on site there. But during the Olympics itself is not a good time to ask, because they're too involved in what's going on. But afterward, I was going to where she was in Arizona for another conference, and I asked if I could just do a quick little video of her saying something about our work together, and she said fine. And so I came to her and did that little video that you probably saw on the website that on sportspsychologycertification.com, or it's on performingedgecoach.com, where she talked about our work together. So yeah, it can be really valuable. But then there's occasionally an athlete that doesn't want that. The athlete I'm working with right now wanted to be keep things confidential, because she just doesn't really want to be in the limelight and isn't just wants to really focus on the Olympics and feeling a lot of pressure. But she did do when she came back here after she made the Olympic trials in swimming, and then she said to me, I asked her if we met once when she was here. And I said, could I do a little video of you for, something good about our work together? And then, so she did that, a really nice little, just a short, 30 seconds, just thanking me. Thank you, Dr. Joanne, for work together and, preparing for the trials. I'm a, past medalist and hope to get a medal at the bronze medalist, at the Rio Olympics. And really liked, it was nice to have someone to talk to and get feedback from. I wanted to email her and say, is it okay to put this video on my website? And she's been real busy. I have not heard back from her, so I haven't, I need to honor that. I'm just using this as an example for all of you too. It's a temptation. You think, well, she gave me a video. Okay, I should just put it up on the website. But because she'd said before she wants things confidential, I need to honor that and wait and get her permission. And if she doesn't give permission, then yeah, I just keep it myself to, for my own files. Because sometimes that's what people want. Or after the Olympics, oftentimes athletes have a better, are okay with it kind of thing. So it's good not to push, but just to do what you can. And it's just great to feel, but you can always say that you worked with Olympian or Olympic hopefuls kind of thing. So, yeah, is that helpful? Maybe put yourself on mute. So
very helpful. Thank you. Sorry,
oh, good.
I was muted.
Yeah, good. But it's important. Yeah, it's important to honor the athletes' wishes and to make sure that you have permission for that in writing, like with an email. So June, are you there too?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, good. Yeah, you asked a great question. You emailed me a question. So why don't I do that one, and then we'll go into the some material here. Well, we're already talking about Olympics, too. But can you just ask me your question, verbally, too, so everyone can hear?
Yeah. So I had a question about applying this for high-stress graduate-level program. I had seen on a Facebook post from the College of Pharmacy where I graduated that they were – at a conference presenting a poster on student retention efforts because it reflects poorly on these college programs and their accreditation if they are losing students from the program because they can't handle the academic rigors or the emotional stress or whatever's going on. And I knew that it was, having gone through the program, I know what it's an incredibly stressful pressure cooker type of a situation. They have even had a couple of suicides where I don't think it was just directly all related to school, but the school certainly, that pressure didn't help anything. And so I sort of reached out to them and I said, this is interesting. I'm doing this work. And I asked them, could you see an application for this? Because I could definitely see an application for test-taking anxiety, for time management, for for handling stress. And they got back to me, and they were like, yeah, that sounds interesting. We're trying to give the students as many resources as we can, but I don't think that they have a real good idea of what it is that I could do for them. So I sort of wanted to just pose the question to everybody, have you worked in situations like this, and what would be some good ways to approach or help a program like that?
Yeah, well, I wanted to respond to you first, June. That's a great question. And you're talking about your pharmacy school, right, that you went to?
Yeah,
which is excellent. That's great that you're actual. That's a heavy-duty program, I know. With pharmacy, there's so much information to learn. And then anyone else can jump in, too, with ideas. It turns out I just happen to be working with a student right now who's taking the bar exam.
Yeah.
Who came to me for test-taking anxiety for the bar exam for, becoming a lawyer, an attorney. And it was very, and that's one of the really stressful exams where it's just a one-time exam where it determines whether you can go ahead and practice as an attorney, and so it's a three-day exam. So that's an example of, I don't even advertise myself or market myself as, you know, somebody who's doing helping with test taking, but it opens a whole new area thought that that's something, even though I don't have anything on my websites or any place that says test taking anxiety, he sought out a sports psychologist for this, so people might contact you for that sort of thing, and soon you could do that definitely for the, we're basically talking about performance coaching,
sure.
not just sports psychology, yeah, for our field, and in fact you can, the type of techniques that we use, these performing edge techniques, could be used for sports, for business, speech coaching. One person in our program is helping with speech coaching for other, teaching people how to give presentations, because that's, when you're in front of public speaking is the number one fear people list on questionnaires, even above death, that people fear public speaking, and because it's they fear the possible humiliation or embarrassment of not doing well, and or choking, freaking out, and then there's musicians, performance anxiety, of course, when they're doing auditions, and so there's all kinds of areas where people need help with this. And test taking anxiety is a huge one, so all those areas can benefit from our kind of work. And the kind of thing I did with this person, we can call him Andrew, was with the bar exam, was that he came to me 2 months, let's see, about 6 weeks before the bar exam, and that's a good time, 6 weeks to 2 months beforehand to start helping someone with test-taking anxiety if they have one. And you might, one suggestion I have for you, June, or is that you could work with, and anyone else, is 6 weeks to 2 months is a good time to maybe work with one individual first in the program for complimentary for a few sessions to demonstrate what you can do, and then that way it's a great entree to developing a program. So you could what I did with this student is ask about the exam itself and, the specifics and what he has to do each day and what kind of exam it is and, what kind of skills he has. For instance, this bar exam is there's some essay and then there is some multiple choice and there's within that there's different types of essays and different types of multiple choice and the goal is to get 65% of the multiple choice. He knows, just ask about the specifics of that, and then what his experience is with taking tests. And he says in the past at school he's been, very good with test taking, but, for this test it's the stakes are much higher. And so and then I talked about how. What other area, tell me about a time when you felt successful or felt really confident. And I left it open. He could be any area in life, test taking or sports. And turns out he talked about his success in athletics in high school, soccer, and went into all of that and said things like, I was the best, I was one athlete of the year. This was way back in high school, and said I could do whatever I wanted. I was in complete control. And then I asked him to describe a situation. He said he could he could take a kick from 25 yards out and get it in the goal, and could put the ball in exactly the upper right corner, and the ball's going to do. I just said to myself, when I'm kicking it, this ball's going to do exactly what I want it to do. And so he was. Really, it was really intense, but, I thrived on pressure, and so nobody could touch me when I was doing my soccer, and same thing with baseball, described that, and he was the fastest runner with the fastest arm, and so So he described that, and then he talked about also being a quarterback on the football team, and that, you know, just said, okay, all I have to do is get this, get to the outside and run or throw. So, you know, just those kind of things, talking about other experiences in athletics when he did really well, and then we got back to, you know, made him the peak performance visualization of his sports experience, and then taking that, you know, anchoring that, creating an anchor of some sort. Maybe if you could put your phones on mute, just press *6, just in case there's a little bit of background noise. Yeah, just so we can get a good recording, that'd be great. And then if you want to ask a question, just press *6 again to speak. That'd be great. Then, you know, and he talked about the practice exams and how he's doing there and the kinds of things that – what you want to do, too, is in pinpointing the need for a program, talk about – you know, maybe interview a few students and talk about the need for their what they are having problems with. This person I was working with said, you know, everything gets magnified when you're doing an exam like this, and you're thinking when you take the practice exams and you don't do that well or miss a few, you think, oh, geez, this is indicative of that I'm not going to do well on the test, and you know, all those negative thoughts start to go through your mind. So. But then we talked also about, you know, what to do to take good care of yourself. Like, you know, June, you asked about stress reducing ideas too for test taking, and that he, in this case with my client, he played golf, was able to go out and do something different than just studying, and feeling to himself you know, I'm on a roll here, just, you know, giving him the right kinds of the positive thoughts, just get through this question, give each question, you know, the correct amount of attention, and then move on. You know, I'm enjoying the process, I'm studying, getting more confident, you know, embrace the multiple choice questions rather than just avoiding them, you know, it's just a short question. They want to know what the best argument is for this particular question. And so those kinds of things we went through and talked about what he's doing right beforehand. If you need, he said, I'm doing all the work I need to do ahead of time, you know, 6 to 9 hours a day studying and then we went through a whole, you know, the same kinds of things that we do for sports. I worked with him on for test taking anxiety, also making sure he gets enough sleep at night and nutrition and studying, you know, planning it out so that he's not cramming at the last minute. For instance, he got to one point where, like, junior students might, in the program, might be doing where they just, when you get really close, like 1 week before the exam, he was just, he was just feeling exhausted and feeling like, God, what if I don't pass this thing after all this work? And what would that be like to have to wait 6 months and do this again? And all these negative thoughts were going through his mind. So that's the time when you could really intervene and give him some powerful things to look at. I said, well, let's see what kind of experience have you had before with taking tests? And then he described to me a tax class that he took, and 13 days out of the study, he was, you know, it was the only grade in the class, this one test. You couldn't take several tests, so it was a lot of stress there, but he felt confident. He said he felt like his answers would be good enough for a good grade, he was saying to himself, and the amount he practiced studied was good. He had a firm grip on the essentials of that. So those kinds of power words or positive self-statements are really good. Saying to yourself, I've done all the practice problems, I know enough that I can get through And to be able to say there's room for mistakes, that they don't, that's really important. Most of these students, you know, probably in your pharmacy program and many programs are perfectionists, and they feel like if they make get one wrong that they ruined the whole thing. But realizing that there's room for error and that nobody's looking for perfection, they just want you to get enough of the answers correct so that they're studying and you just have to identify what the issue is in each problem and then analyze it and then go into as much depth as you can with the details and reach a conclusion and do your problem solving. So make a good decision. And seeing the test as your friend, you know, seeing rather than seeing it as this horrible thing to have to do, seeing the each test as an opportunity for a door is opening to, you know, getting through the program, to being able to practice and do what you want to do. So I worked with this person for the last, actually worked together for the last 4 or 5 weeks or so, and now today he's actually, as we speak right now, he's taking the day 3 of his bar exam, the last day, so we'll see how he does there. But he, now that's the kind of example where you could really, you know, if you could work with, like June, work with one student for, and just, you know, for a few sessions for a complimentary and make a real difference, then you could have develop an example and then go to the program there and tell them how, what you could do is do a course, or you could either work with individuals, say, you know, and have them just pay you individually. Oftentimes students are, you know, the parents are giving them financial help, so often most of the time parents will help, will pay for your sessions, or another way is to go through, ask the, you know, the school has a curriculum, I'm sure, and probably that's one thing they're not addressing is test-taking anxiety, and so you could, if you could be a, a professor or assistant professor or teacher, whatever they call that position, you could actually get a, you know, design a course. Call it something, test taking proficiency or anxiety or performance coaching for tests and for getting through school. I'm sure they would really embrace that. So but talking first, it's good to outline what the problems are. Like you say, I mean, 2 suicides that you mentioned is major, and that's the sort of thing that could get in the news and get some bad press. And if you can emphasize the problems there, you can really convince them. So is that there's some ideas for you, and hopefully that's of some help, June?
Yeah, that's great. And that actually kind of reinforces what I was thinking, which was just if I could get into contact with 1 or 2 students and just do some free work with them, that would, you know, if there really is a need and if it really does work, then I think it'll kind of take care of itself as far as getting the business part of it going. So, that's really helpful.
Yeah, that's great. So,
Dr. Joanne?
Yes. Oh, hi, Michelle.
Hi. Can I ask you a question with regards to this?
Yeah, sure.
Would it be valuable to have the student just imagine what life would be like once they complete and pass a test, or is that getting too far ahead?
I think that's a great question. A great idea, too. I did that with this student, and I forgot to mention that. That's a great thing to be able to say, you know, because it's like the test is just a door opening, an opportunity for them to practice to do what they want to do. So, yeah, imagine them after the test, because that's all they can think about right now is the test. But if they see that afterward it's doing their, you know, having a great career, in this case in pharmacy, then that's a really good way to associate the test with something really good, right? Yeah, Yeah, that's excellent, Michelle. Thank you. Yeah, and it's good to, and also you can imagine what, you know, taking the test and the actual experience of taking the test as being a good one, being relaxed, knowing the knowing the answers, and if you miss one, to just be able to say, okay, that's fine, just move on, and then afterwards. Yeah, just imagining relaxing and doing something, you know, doing like a little reward after the test to go out and go out to eat or go for, you know, go to the beach, whatever they enjoy doing. And then, yeah, getting, to, yeah, just imagine a nice, a wonderful day at work, say, or being able to help other people. That's mostly what people are so rewarding is helping other people with their expertise. Yeah, thanks, Michelle.
Thanks, Dr. Joanne.
Yeah, that's great. So hopefully that helps too, June. And I've got, I know that you asked a couple other, I don't know if, I just want to check in too with, Jeff and Will, are you guys still there too? Or did you have any thoughts or any questions? Or maybe they might be on mute. But you can press star 6 if you're on mute and to unmute yourself. Okay. Well, there you are. Hi, who's that?
Will.
Oh, hi, Will. Okay. Well, good to hear your voice. Are you? If you had any comments on that or questions?
No, I'm just listening. Just gaining the knowledge.
Okay. Great. Thanks. Yeah. Okay. Well, just wanted to make sure you're there. And then, Michelle, you had a question that you emailed in, too, which was great. Do you want to ask your question? Just ask it verbally here, too?
So yeah. Thinking. Oh, am I muted?
No, you're good. I can hear you.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So, yeah, I had two questions. One was goals and the importance of, like, I realize the importance of dreaming big and setting, you know, those big, hairy, audacious goals. But I'm a little bit confused because if you set, I know you talk about setting manageable goals and then like having a big goal, but then also breaking it into chunks, so manageable chunks and little milestones along the way. But say, for instance, and this is hypothetical, I actually don't have an athlete like right now that's dealing with this, but say you have an athlete that wants to make, say, the Canadian national ski team, and they're 15, and they haven't even made the provincial ski team yet, but that's their ultimate dream, is to make the Canadian national ski team. Do you spend a lot of time in that space of visualizing that outcome that's maybe 4 or 5 years in the future, or can that cause problems in itself? Because I think maybe it can be distracting or fears can come up because it's quite a momentous goal, right?
Right.
So I'm just wondering, how big do we go?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think, I think you hit the nail on the head, Michelle, that most athletes get hung up on too much visualizing of the podium, say, podium moments or getting the medal or, you know, being on the medal stand, because then they put that as the only standard for success. And there's many ways to succeed, of course, and, you know, often just making an Olympic team or making a professional team or being selected for something, you know, a position that they want to play, or the ski team just getting on, say, the regional team or something at a lower level first is a really great accomplishment. So I think, yeah, just being, especially if they've never done that before, that, you know, visualizing, you know, being on a podium or getting something. It's good to dream, like you say, big, hairy, audacious goals. That's, yeah, that's a great term these days. What is it? B-H-A-G?
Yeah.
Bag. That's funny. Even if you don't have a hairy goal.
Yeah.
That's funny.
I love the idea, but I just don't know how it can, I feel like it can get an athlete into trouble.
Yeah, I'll give an example of that too. Is, you know, I had a mother come in with her 11-year-old daughter, who is a ice skater, here a year ago or so, a couple of years ago, and she and said, "Oh my!" And so the mother and daughter are both there, and she said, "My daughter has 7 private coaches currently." I thought, she's 11 years old. She has 7 private coaches, and the mother says, "Oh yeah, and she's on an Olympic track. Yeah, she will be at the Olympics, and she's only 11 years old." And so the mother is speaking for the daughter. It's obviously the mother's goals, and so it forcing those on the child. And then she brings out a picture, and the picture is, she says, "Oh, here's a picture of my daughter on the Olympic podium. Oh, it's not really my daughter. It's just I had her face photoshopped in."
Oh boy,
can you believe that?
Oh God,
that's a big, hairy, audacious mother, right?
Yeah, totally. Pressure too. My gosh,
what's that?
Pressure.
Pressure, yeah. And she actually wrote, she was an author. She said, "I wrote 2 books about my daughter and her, here's my books with pictures and poems about her ice skating." And I thought, oh my gosh. And then
yeah.
And like you say, it had a negative effect on the daughter, because the daughter really was kind of sick of ice skating, and daughter did not share the same goals, or there was just too much pressure too early. Had 7 private coaches, one for, you know, strengthening, conditioning, and our choreographer, and a coach for her jump coach, and you know, she needed I think the mother needed a coach to duct tape across her mouth.
Yeah.
Duct tape coach. So that was an audacious example, I guess, of that. Because when I saw the daughter there, she's just like any other kid. She's saying, "Oh, I lost my iPhone the other day. Oh man, and my friend put me 2nd on her friends list. I thought I was 1," and just talking about regular stuff. So, and the mother said, "We're flying back to the East Coast next weekend to have private lessons with the Olympic coach, not just a workshop, but private lessons." So it was just, you know, the ridiculous how it was way too much too soon, and I think that was an example of too much. I think it's better to and like you say, it's a disadvantage to getting too far ahead. Yeah, you can set those big goals, but then it's good to kind of put them in the back of your mind, I think, and just let them sit there, the goal of getting to the Olympics or something. And then just be able to work on, okay, what do I need to work on today to get better, and let the big audacious goal handle itself. If you get closer to it, and then you say, okay, what's the next step? What's the next step to getting on this, you know, to getting good form, to be able to, you know, make the cut for the next level of, you know, like in swimming, you go to the, you have to make a certain time goals, and so you get closer to those time goals, and you just work on the next level. And my athlete that's at the Olympics, she made the swimmer that made the Olympic team 2 weeks ago at the Olympic Trials in Omaha, Nebraska. She said the way she got through there was to just say each day, okay, today, you know, they first had the prelims, and she said, okay, now I know all I have to do is beat 2 people.